Good morning. Up right now on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's the Mind and Heart Show. For the next hour, it's thoughts and feelings and the way they affect our lives and the world we live in. The phone number in the studio is 434-284-9470. Now here's your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier.
Charlottesville, and welcome to the Mind and Heart Show. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WPVC 94.7 FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Please join us this morning by posting a question on our Facebook page at Mind and Heart Show. You can send us a tweet at MindHeartWPVC. Or email us at mindheartwpvc@gmail.com. You can also listen to the show, stream it live, if you go to our website, the WPVC website. It's 947wpvc.org, and stream the show live if you get out of range of our signal. And then probably by tomorrow, you can listen to the show on our podcast at SevillePodcast.com. Today's show and all past shows will be on the podcast. So welcome this morning. I'm very pleased to welcome my guest this morning, Reverend Patricia Lansky. You may recall that Reverend Don Lansky, Patricia's husband, was on some weeks ago, and I had asked Patricia to come on, and she did so, and we're very grateful for that. And we're going to be talking about her new book this morning and a wide range of other things. But I wondered if, well, let me say good morning to you first, Patricia.
Good morning, Jeff. It's great to be here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So tell our listeners a little bit about your professional background, sort of, you know, what, how you got here.
Okay. Well, I started out in college for theater and speech and drama. I became a teacher of speech and drama, and then I went on also to get my master's in theater, and then my master in fine arts and acting, which was great fun and wonderful. Theater was my first love.
Okay.
And then after a number of years, I became an equity actor.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes, I was.
My brother's in the theater, so I actually know what that means.
Oh, good. Yes, I was.
That's impressive.
I was in a Shakespearean repertory company for a couple of years up in Maine, in Monmouth, Maine. And from that, because it was a Lort company, regional repertory company, I was able to become an equity actor.
That's great.
And then after that, of course, SAG and AFTRA as well. And so
Screen Actors Guild, for those that don't know what SAG is.
Yes, yes. And so I pursued that for a number of years in New York. And then a life change happened. Actually, it's something I write about in the book. My little brother Mark died. And it was such a huge transition for me in many ways that I really felt that I wanted to do something more mm-hmm. with my life. And I decided to become a psychotherapist at that point. And I got my master's in social work from Barry University in Miami, mm-hmm. which was quite a wonderful school. And it was just lovely. And many people ask me, well, how did you ever go from being an actor to being a social worker?
A therapist.
Yes. And I always said, well, you know, what I really loved about the theater was the characters, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, doing Shakespeare and other classics, it was so rich and
yes.
wonderful. And then I said, well, then when I was a therapist, you know, the characters would come in and present themselves to me right in my own room.
So it wasn't a dramatic transition then from the one profession to the other.
Yes, that's right. And then after many years of, I was in agency practice for a while, and then I was in private practice for a number of years.
Did you stay in Miami after graduate school?
Yes, I did mm-hmm. for quite a while, and that's where my practice was. I always enjoyed also doing group work.
Mm-hmm.
That was always a part of my practice. And after a while, I started to realize that there was a spiritual component that was needed in a lot of the people that I was working with. And at that time, I started attending Unity, Unity on the Bay in Miami. excuse me. And I experimented with a group of people who were in my practice for a number of years. They were kind of very long-term. They were about eight women.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a group with them, and it was based on spirituality. And I tell you, there were so many wonderful changes that happened so quickly because of that connection of the psychological and the spiritual together. And from that I thought, I really want to become a minister, someone that could combine all of this together, you know, because it is, we're a holistic being, you
right.
know, so all of it is needed in some ways. So that's when I was attracted to really Unity and becoming a Unity minister. And I feel that the first time that I went to a Unity center, which was in Miami there, I really truly felt like I was home.
Oh, yeah.
I really did. It was so familiar to me in a way that I just couldn't imagine.
So it really resonated.
It really did. And it was their Christmas candle lighting service, which is very beautiful, and it's a wonderful ritual. And I felt at that moment I wanted to be a Unity minister. But then I got involved in the church. I got to know, actually, at that church, there were co-ministers, two men. They're not in partnership, but they were just co-ministers together. And I loved them, you know, and I really resonated with them and with the messages and everything. And I thought, well, as I watched these ministers, I thought, my gosh, they work so hard. I think that I will just continue to be a psychotherapist. I have my group. I am. I'm making a difference in lives. I'll attend Unity, and that'll be it. And then as I continued to get more involved in it, and I met Don there, we actually met in a Bible study class, which was delightful. And he, at that time, really wanted to be a minister. And I went with him to Unity Village, which is the headquarters of Unity.
In Kansas, I believe.
Kansas City, yes. Just 20 minutes southeast of Kansas City, Lee Summit. And I went there, and the energy of the place is just magnificent because they have 24/7 prayer ministry that's been going on 120 years nonstop. So you just come into this energy field of prayer and peace and beauty. And I was meditating with Don there when he was actually applying for the ministerial school. And in the middle of meditation, I really got the call, you know, that I would be a Unity mm-hmm. minister. And at that, and then I didn't deny it anymore. I didn't try to
fight it.
Yes.
And here we are. And so yes. I don't know if I mentioned earlier, but you are co-pastor with Don at Unity Charlottesville.
That's right. Yes.
And you, the two of you have been here for some years.
Yes, 15 years.
15 years.
Yeah.
That's great.
We came right after 9/11.
Okay.
October 1st, 2001. You know.
Yeah.
And so it was a whole huge transition
in
for
many
us
ways. And, yeah,
in many ways
in the community.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
You have recently published a book, which I just read and just absolutely was really, really impressed with. Wonderful book called "Accepting Death, Embracing Life: How Death Teaches Us to Live." And tell us, if you would, what inspired you to write the book? Because it's a powerful work.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. I have had a lot of experience personally with death and dying from my childhood on. And starting it when I was 15 years old, my father died of cancer. And after that, until my mother died about 23 years later, there were seven people in our family who died, and it seemed to be almost like once every 3 years, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a constant environment of long-term illnesses, mostly cancer, and issues of death and dying, hospital visits, treatments, difficult deaths in many ways. And so that was kind of the milieu of my my life. And by the time, well, during all of this progression, I was also growing up in a culture that denied death.
Right.
And so there was a great dichotomy there in being, in seeing death pretty consistently through my lifetime, and yet not having an avenue to speak about it, to grieve openly about it, or mm-hmm. any of that. So it was a very interesting problem there for myself. And also what I found was, as each person died, I became, well, from the beginning, from my father's death, I had a great fear of death.
Okay.
Because there was no access to understanding it.
Right.
And my mother, who was a very strong person and had gone through a lot of her own loss in her life and had been pretty much the anchor in her family, she knew how to deal with death. She had an awareness of it, but we never talked about it.
Okay.
You know, how to. But I observed that she had an awareness. She had a groundedness. She didn't seem afraid mm-hmm. at all. And I yearned to be like her. I didn't know what that magical combination was that she had. But I came to realize, you know, through all of these deaths that I, and all of the fear that I was experiencing, that I wanted some way to transcend that fear. And when my mother finally was diagnosed with her cancer, that was my goal, that I was going to be there for her. I was going to look death in the face. I was going to transcend my fear of it somehow. And in that process, I started writing a journal of everything that was happening so that I could stay conscious, I could stay present and mindful of everything that was going on and not through fear phase out, you know.
Right.
And so there was, and I was dedicated to that. I was very, very, I tried as much as I could to be very clear and very exact in everything that I was experiencing and witnessing. And during that process, I was with my mom, and I said to her one day, I said, you know, I think I want to write a book about you. And she gave me her permission. She said, if you would like to do that, that's fine with me, you know. So that was like a a permission from that moment on.
Okay.
And and I felt I had things to share.
And did the book come out of the journal that you began to write? I mean, was that sort of the foundation of
it? It was
of
the beginning
book?
Of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Her permission. And then my brother, who is very close with me, at one point he said to me, you know, I think you have gone through so much with death and dying. And, of course, I took care of our mother in her final stages. And he said, have you ever thought about writing a book about it? So that was like the second confirmation, you know. Some people say...
Somebody's trying to tell you something.
Yes, you hear things more than once. It's like, okay,
pay attention.
All right, I will.
Yeah, yeah. Just to give us a little flavor, when I opened the book in that preface, there was a... you described a friend who was dying at the time, and just share a little bit with our listeners, if you would, about that, because I thought it was such a wonderful entree into the book.
Mm. Well, this was a friend of mine who did not have an easy life, and then it seemed that, you know, when things were getting to be a little bit better, then she developed this cancer. It looked like she was going to pull out of it. But then all of a sudden, they said there was nothing more they could do for her. So it was shocking to her, to anybody around her. And what was so compelling about her story, as opposed to others where that could be a very similar scenario, I was struck by just how extremely afraid she was.
Mm-hmm.
And that she had no context of what she was about to face in her death. She was brought up in a religion. I don't think she was, I know she wasn't religious. Neither was she very spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had the upbringing of her religion that said, you know, she could go to hell. And I could tell she had a lot of guilt about things in her life that were not resolved. And she just was facing really the jaws of hell, you know, and along with this illness that was so devastating, along with the fact that she was not really getting the help that she needed at the end of her life. She was in extreme pain. The medications apparently weren't working, or I don't know, but she was in pain. She was not helped past that. And I know there's so much work being done now on palliative care.
Right.
And so people don't have to go through that. But my gosh, you know, on every level, she was facing such pain, you mm-hmm. know, spiritually, psychologically, physically, and emotionally. And she was like the quintessential of what I see a lot of people go through, that they don't have a context of how to hold death, and they don't have a way to resolve their life ahead of time to be able to approach this incredible transition with any kind of peace of mind.
Right, any equanimity.
No.
Yeah.
So this was painful for me.
Yes.
I tried to help her in those last weeks or days, and she was open to hearing my ideas about death and dying, but in a way it was just a little bit too much, too late.
Too little, you know? Too late. Yeah,
yes.
Too much. If you're just joining us on the Mind and Heart Show, we're speaking this morning with the Reverend Patricia Lansky about her new book, Accepting Death, Embracing Life. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a moment. And we are back. It's a couple of programming notes. Right after our show today at 10 o'clock at the top of the hour is Straight Talk with Andra Hakes, so stay tuned for that. And this Sunday morning on the Wake Up Call, the guest will be Jane Kulo, program director for the upcoming Charlottesville Festival of the Book. She will join host Rick Moore in the studio. This is actually the 22nd annual Festival of the Book, and the phone lines will be open on Rick's show for your calls. That's Wake Up Call. Tomorrow, Sunday at 11 a.m. on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Brought to you by the Tiger. Strength is in their fuel, Tiger Fuel. do a quick check of the weather before we get back to our guest this morning. It's currently 36 degrees in Charlottesville. It's cloudy out there this morning. I believe they're running the Charlottesville 10-miler this morning, and if that's true, it's probably good running weather. So tomorrow, we're looking at a high today of 50 and cloudy. Tomorrow, 56, a little warmer and partly cloudy. One more programming note before we get back to our guest. The Life After High School Transition and Resource Fair is going to be held on Saturday, March 19th from 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at K-Tech, which is at 1000 East Rio Road. This is a free event, and it will include presentations by transition pointers, effective self-advocacy, employment supports, how to communicate at IEP meetings, Region 10 services, case management, guardianship and alternatives, family support connections, and transition from high school to college. This is for folks with developmental disabilities. The Resource Fair exhibitors will share important information about community resources. And if you want more information, you can contact Deborah at 434-975-9400. That's 434-975-9400 for the Prep Parent Resource Center. So back to our guests, Reverend Patricia Galino Lansky, who's co-pastor at Unity Charlottesville, and we're talking about her new book this morning, Accepting Death, Embracing Life. Patricia, you mentioned earlier that you lost your dad at age 15. That's a tough age. Talk a little bit about that impact. And I wonder if you could start by just reading the poem on page 12 called Father Is.
Yes. I was
really moved by that. If you would share that with us.
Thank you. Father Is. My brother's eyes shine, glimpsing magical, mysterious firelight in his baby boy, seeing the luminescence of this little one's being through his own soul's mirror image bounced back and forth between father and son. Slowly, my brother is beginning to turn around, to look over his shoulder into the face of our father, lost to us at 56. Although the first looking at his son was miraculous, this second glance at his father is more elusive. There is the distance of time and the difference of dimensional planes, yet a silvery shimmer of connection remains. Father is. But where is Father? How do you find one so long absent? I see him so clearly in dreams, in images of home. I have words, pictures, memories stored in my heart. At Delaware Lake, shadowed by towering oak trees, sledding down snow-packed hills, giggling, clinging to his back for life. In his barber shop, spinning me on his imposing barber chair, exotic talc wafting in circles around me. In his closet, touching neatly hanging silky ties with the unmistakable fresh scent that is Dad. On our walks, trying to keep up with his long strides, a smile in his eyes as he sings in his gentle, light voice, Margie, and I'm forever blowing bubbles. I see him lift his newborn, chunky-cheeked son, kissing him, celebrating him. Father is now in the shape of my brother's eyes, in his face and in his smile, in the way he moves, and in some of his thoughts. I watch this unfolding of father to son, son to father, mirrors facing mirrors, reflecting their images into infinity. I am powerless in this rite of identification, but I long for my brother's fulfillment. and for my own.
Thank you. That's just beautiful. What a wonderful tribute to your father.
Thank you.
You wrote so movingly of your relationship with him, so I'm just trying to imagine at 15 to lose such an important person must have been just a tremendous shock.
It really was. It really was. And not knowing that he was dying was even worse.
That whole thing, and I'm going to ask you about the don't talk rule, because the book goes right into that. I think many of us grew up with that on the issue of death. Don't talk about it. Don't let the children go to the funeral. Don't involve them.
Yes.
It's just such an futile attempt to shut the thing down.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I know that I'm sure that my parents were thinking they were doing the right thing. You know, they were trying to save us from
pain
and the grief that they were feeling. And yet, it was not the right path, because I'm sure you know, but I definitely know that children feel something.
Absolutely.
And they don't necessarily have words for it, and if they don't have any way to validate it, it's so deeply confusing. That you can't, a child can't do anything but then blame themselves and think, well, I must be a little bit off, or I must be getting this wrong, or, you know, I'm sure that I'm not picking anything up correctly, which is undermining to one's own perceptions and innate integrity.
You know, and I'm sure you have as well, over the years, worked with so many adults in psychotherapy who had been through an early loss of a parent and had it covered up in the way you just described. And the unprocessed grief that they brought even into adulthood, and the need to really finally feel that and cry and grieve, was so important. But I always wonder how many folks are walking around with that wound still scabbed over, but not in any way resolved.
I think so many people, particularly in our culture.
Yes.
You know, because it's in general not embraced.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so sanitized. I was actually going to ask you about if you would speak to that question of how you think we might do a better job culturally in dealing with loss and death.
Mm. Well, it's really a wonderful question. And of course, societally, I think everything gets changed one heart at a time.
Right.
So that's probably the best way that we can look at it. But I realize that I am involved in the beginning, the early level of a beautiful movement in our culture to really embrace more of death and dying. And, of course, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is, you know, the mother of the whole movement, and
yes.
And she was so profound in her books and her her vision of being able to change the societal view of death and dying, and I believe she made such inroads.
She really did.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now, and there are many other writers. You know, one of my personal favorites is Stephen Levine.
Yes.
Who
A
I
Year
don't know.
To Live.
Yes.
That's a wonderful book.
I don't know if you know, but he just
died. I saw that. Yeah, it was
January.
Yeah,
Which is a great loss, I know, to many. And his material is so vital.
Yes,
so beautiful, and it really helped me a lot in my process.
Yeah.
So there are the information that's getting out there. Hospice, of course, has their main focus to make sure that people are helped during this process, that they have a way to speak about it. You know, they have so many support groups and all of that.
Right.
And so my book, I feel, is along these lines. And my focus was really to have a manual that would be helpful to the average American.
Yes.
So it is spiritual book, but it's not religious, and it's not contained in any one religion.
Right. Because, I found that to be so true. It's it's very welcoming in that it's in no way doctrinaire or dogmatic.
Mm. Yes.
I really appreciated that about the book.
Yeah, that was really important to me, because I feel that in some religions, like Buddhism, like Hinduism, like indigenous cultures, Native American spirituality, they address death and dying. So if a person is involved, really involved in those religions, hopefully they are getting that message and they are getting that support. But what about my friend, at the beginning of the book,
who, and millions of people like her.
Yes, yes. Who might not pick up, the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. She would never read that. But maybe she would read something about a simple Gail from Buffalo, New York.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
One of the things, to your point there, that I've found so helpful about the book and so important, at the end of each chapter, you have what you call a sacred process. And for me, it's one thing to read a book sort of theoretically about death and dying, but to have actual concrete steps, I mean, that's where I think the rubber meets the road. Mm. And would you just tell our listeners a little bit about that process and including those in the book?
Yes. This was very important to me, too, because I felt, I wanted to reach people on the various levels of their learning. So some people can really learn by hearing a story and then seeing how it relates to themselves. So that's a lot of the narrative of the book. Some people can learn by actually having questions that will propel them to go deeper. And that's why I included the sacred process at the end of each chapter. And the questions are designed to bring the listener into the process much more, for them to do their own personal work, not to just stop at, that was an interesting story or whatever, but how does this meet my life? How does it inform my life? And so that is my hope, that the people will take it a step further through the sacred process.
And your book is the first that I've read on this subject, which provides really a roadmap. I'm just looking here randomly in the book on page 63, you have a process about how do I grieve. And it is so specific and so helpful, because it really does give some concrete suggestions about steps to take. And I so recall so many people I would come in with what you and I would call pathological mourning, unresolved grief, and they really needed a roadmap.
Yes.
They needed, what steps do I take? How do I do this? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do this. And this lays it out so clearly.
Thank you. I really wanted that for people, because you don't get that in the culture. So where do you find it? And being at loss, being at a loss for how to grieve, which is a core emotion, and there's no access to it. So I did lay out very specific ideas here, mostly being bringing oneself to a willingness to talk about it, to talk about the details, to talk about the memories, to talk about the happy times, the sad times, whatever you remember, and to just speak about it. And if there's nobody to talk to, then journal about it.
Yes.
Because the journal will listen. The journal will be there for you at 3 a.m. in the morning when you can't sleep. It'll be there whenever you need it.
Just reach for it, yeah.
Yes, and it'll be there to remind you when you've forgotten as well. And also, I really wanted people to have permission to take time, to know that this is a process that they're involved in, that you can't rush it. And that you, it's, you know, against our culture to like, we would just say, okay, that's done. Now let's
get over it.
Get over it, squeeze myself back into my work and forget about it. That's not what happens with grief.
Right.
You know, it, as I say, it actually moves into your house.
With beautiful you. Metaphor. Yeah. Yeah. And I would tell folks, and I know you know this as well, that it will come in waves, you know, but you have to stay present with it. Be with it. Don't try to suppress it. Don't try to distract yourself with whatever.
Yes.
You know, you need to go through the process.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And it'll, you know, it'll have its ups and downs. And that whatever you're feeling, you know, whatever you're feeling about it is important and real and generic.
And normal and okay.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's not wrong. It's not shameful.
Yes. Even anger. Even anger at somebody that died, you know, which you would feel like, well, that's what I went through with my father.
Yes.
I was angry that he left me.
Yeah.
But I couldn't allow myself at that time to acknowledge that I was angry at him because I thought that would mean that I was angry at him.
Yeah.
Not at the situation.
Or the loss.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's important.
Would you turn to page 45 and sure. read for us, if you would, that last paragraph? It's just, mm-hmm. I think it captures what we were just talking about, the one that starts, in all losses.
In all losses, grieving has its own natural unfoldment, and the rhythm of grieving can be surprising and confusing at times. One day you may wish to stay in bed crying for a long time. The next day, you could feel refreshed, energized, even happy. How do you make sense of these dramatic emotional swings? On one hand, it doesn't feel appropriate to laugh and be happy. After all, your loved one is dead. Can these positive feelings be seen as an honoring of your grief and your loved one? Yes. All of the varieties of feelings are appropriate and good. All honest expressions help to shift the psyche into balance, into wholeness. Continue to surround yourself with life, to cultivate life, to express whatever emerges in you. No emotion will erase the love that you shared. Love is eternal.
That's beautiful. So you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. In the studio with me is our producer, Morgan Geyer, this morning. And my guest today is the Reverend Patricia Galino Lansky, and we're talking about her new book, Accepting Death and Embracing Life. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a moment with some more discussion. Stay with us. And we are back. You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7 FM. We are the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. I'm your host here every Saturday morning between 9 and 10 for the Mind and Heart Show. And this morning, we have as our guest, I'm very pleased to say, the Reverend Patricia Galino Lansky. She is the co-pastor of Unity Charlottesville, and she's recently published a wonderful book called Accepting Death, Embracing Life, How Death Teaches Us to Live. One of the things that I really enjoyed about the book, of many things that I thought was powerful, was the role of poetry in the book and as an aid to grieving. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about that.
Mm. Well, once again, the poems were a surprise to me. I had not really written much poetry before, and when I was working on the book, the poems really just flowed out of me. And what they were for me was really a way to express some of these complex emotions and feelings, concepts that were, I felt came out in symbolism and in metaphor. Hopefully, my hope in putting them in was that they communicated in a different way with people on a metaphorical level.
A left brain level?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Or is it right brain? I always confuse that.
I did too. Yes, but that, you know, that way to describe grief or something like that, how do you describe it?
Yeah, and your poems speak to so many aspects of it. You mm-hmm. know, you some talk about, excuse me, fear. Some talk about, you know, shock. Other aspects to it. I loved how you sort of covered so many of the aspects of grief, mm-hmm. not just in the narrative, but also with the poetry.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, yeah, that was my hope that it would take it to a deeper level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and I think it. I think it really does. Mm-hmm. So, when your mother was dying, you talk in the book about the active process of journaling, in as you went through that with her. And you know, there's a lot of schools of thought about journaling in other spheres, but I found this to be such a helpful suggestion, and I wondered if we could hear from you a bit about that.
Mm. Yes, it's. I found journaling to be perhaps a best friend, I would say, because it was, like I said before, always available. But what I had noticed in the fear that I had previously, that fear would help me to go unconscious. You know, so the journaling kept me grounded.
Okay. It didn't take you out of the experience.
No.
I mean, it allowed you not to be taken out of the
yes,
experience.
Yes, exactly. And so moment by moment, I'm thinking, you know, I want to remember this. I want to remember this. I want to be able to write it down. I want to be able to understand it more deeply. You know, so it was a wonderful process in that way.
And did you find that it allowed you, or once you gave yourself permission, to sort of experience a range of emotions as you went through this journey?
Absolutely. You know, here I had my mother in her, you know, dying condition, frail condition. There was no way that I wanted to express difficult emotions to her. To add to her difficulty at that time, you know, but I had difficult emotions.
Of course.
And so where I was able to go with them was in the journaling, you know, and if there was anger or whatever there was, you know, I could express that, not have it be dumped on her, you know.
Right.
Which I didn't want to do at all, and resolve it, you know, resolve it. It's a beautiful process. It's just beautiful.
And did you share any of that with her? I mean, were there any aspects of that? Did you tell her you were keeping a journal? Did you?
I did. I did tell her that. And what I did with her was I would read passages from Stephen Levine's book. And Stephen, in Who Dies, in his book Who Dies, he has got... processes. They're mostly meditative processes within each chapter of his book.
Right.
And, you know, they're very beautiful and profound. And one of the ones that I shared with Mom was the idea of forgiveness. And, of course, forgiveness is so important to resolve those issues that you don't want to take with you into this dying process.
Right.
You know. Because they can be very difficult and painful, and
right.
So we talked about it, you know, and one of the most beautiful memories I have of that time was her sincere apology to me for things that she had, mistakes she had made, you know, and bringing
really,
me up.
Gosh,
and
really clear the air, and you don't
yes.
have to take all these unresolved feelings with you after a loss like that.
Yes.
That's so important.
And it was so courageous on her part, too, to do that, you know, and to really express that she admitted she made mistakes.
Of course, we all
yes.
do, yes.
And it was a healing between us. It really was.
You know, my first exposure to that, not my first, but a recent exposure to that notion, one of one of my colleagues, co-teachers at IMCC, Susan Stone. I don't know if you know Susan.
I do know her.
She wrote a book called At the 11th Hour, and it's about the process of going through her mother's death in a similar vein. So I thought it really dovetailed nicely with what you shared about that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I would say about Stephen, the other book of his that I really love is A Year to Live. And for those that aren't familiar with the book, it's really imagining you have a year to live, and it takes you through the process of of dealing with your own demise. And a small group I was in some years ago, we used that book, and it's quite powerful.
Yes.
He had amazing perspective that's pretty rare in the West, I think, as is your perspective on this whole topic.
Yeah, he was a great guide for me.
I never met him, but I certainly appreciated his contribution.
Mm-hmm.
So can we just circle back for a minute? Because I did want to have you say a little bit more about the don't talk rule, especially as it regards children.
Yes. I think that adults can do well to look for signs of openings for the children in their readiness to understand something or to ask questions. And really, the question is the most important. You know, if a parent doesn't know how to begin a topic, you know, whatever it is, but certainly around death, they can ask the child, you know, do you have a question about this? Are you confused about anything? Do you see something that you don't understand? You know, to help them to bring out in the way that they would language it, what is amiss here, you know? And in that way, I think parents, adults, can be very sensitive to the level of information that the child might be able to understand.
And age appropriate is part of that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. Certainly, I was 15. I could understand the concept. You know, my brother was 10. He was completely left out of everything as well. And they didn't know how, you know, so not to blame them, but if for others, you know, to just begin by being there with them, trying to bring out what feelings are you having? What questions are you having? You know, and of course that would be a way to engage in life with a child from the beginning on, you know, getting their opinion, their understanding, building on that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you hear so many situations where someone might say, well, daddy's in a better place, or, you know, just sort of things that are, I think, not always particularly helpful because they don't engage the child. They're just sort of platitudes that get tossed out. And I think a lot of it is, and I'd be interested in your perspective on this, parents are anxious about talking to kids. They don't know what to say. They're afraid. They think they're going to traumatize the child or
something. Yeah, I realize that. And I think a lot of it is perhaps their own uncomfortability with deeper emotions. And, you know, and we all have that to some extent. But it is a parental role, I think, to be able to move through that for the good of the children.
Yeah.
And just, you know, it's messy.
It's messy.
You know,
absolutely.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's messy.
Yeah.
But when people say, you know, it's God's will, or he's in a better place or something like that, that is so confusing.
And it short circuits the whole process potentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
You know, one of the things that over the last now 6 or 8 years, my father died, two of my closest male friends died. And what I found, and I actually spoke to this in a talk, was that by what I would call leaning into the grief, it really opened me up. I mean, it was a process of feeling so fully present.
Mm.
And it wasn't all painful, but it was just this incredible opening that I think if we allow ourselves to lean into the grief, to lean into the loss, it can be powerfully transforming.
Mm. Oh, I couldn't agree more. And that's why, you know, the title is, as it is, Accepting Death, Embracing Life, How Death Teaches Us to Live.
Right.
So how does that happen? You know, it's when we are willing to look at what we most fear in our lives and to lean into it, to go through it with however messy it is. What you find on the other side of it is who you are, and that you are greater than anything that is frightening.
Yeah.
You know, that, and then you really can live.
Absolutely.
Because you have, you know who you are, you have strengths, you know that nothing will disturb you in that way again,
right.
You know.
Yeah, it was powerful, and I say that to folks all the time. You know, you just have to embrace it. You can't, you know, any avoidance is going to come back and bite you. So,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. So even with the children.
Yeah, likewise.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We're unfortunately almost out of time. I just had a couple more questions, and then I wanted to give you a chance to tell us about some of the activities that are going on with regard to the book, and then where our listeners can get the book. But before we do that, talk just a little bit about letting go. One of the later chapters in the processes that you described, you characterize as letting go. And again, I thought that was a really important concept.
Yes, I agree with you. It is something in the Western culture that is not embraced. We don't want to let go of anything. And we say, why should I? but there is a great importance in letting go and developing a practice of letting go. Obviously, when we die, we let go of everything.
Right.
You know, except for our soul and the love that we have experienced giving and receiving here in this lifetime. I feel that that endures. But we let go of everything. And not being tied to the material, to what we think should be, you know, but being open to the divine flow of the universe allows us to see things that we might not ordinarily see.
Yeah.
You know, and what indigenous cultures have that Western culture doesn't have is that sense that we are enfolded and surrounded in spirit.
Yes.
And that there is beauty and goodness that is just waiting to emerge for all of us. But if we're holding on in fear again to anything that we might be changed or lose, we strangle that. We're not open, we're not flexible to something even greater coming into our life. We only have what we're holding on to.
Right, yeah.
And very often, beauty and other greatness comes in when we let go.
Yeah, no, well said. So we're just about out of time. Patricia, tell our listeners where they can get a copy of this book, and then I want you to speak a little bit to the book study that you're offering.
All right. You can get this book on Amazon.com.
Okay.
It's also available on my website, which is my name, PatriciaGulinoLansky.com. And
it's G-U-L-I-N-O, Patricia, G-U-L-I-N-O-L-A-N-S-K-Y.com.
It's also available at Unity of Charlottesville Bookstore on Hydraulic Road.
So someone could just stop by during working hours and pick up
Absolutely.
A copy.
Absolutely, yes. And I'm very excited about the book study that's going to be happening starting this Sunday from 1 to 3 at Unity of Charlottesville. It's a book discussion series. As you've seen, there are 7 chapters in this book. And what we're doing is covering 2 chapters a month. So starting on this Sunday, the 6th of March, from 1 to 3, we will explore the first chapter in depth.
Okay.
And then the next one would be the 13th, the second chapter. So it's 2 chapters a month, March, April, May, and then 1 chapter in June.
Okay. And it's open to anyone. It's not just for members of the Unity community.
Absolutely. Open to anybody who would like to come. And it's also a drop-in kind of feeling to it, too.
Okay.
You don't have to be there for all 7 weeks. I would encourage a person who wants to resolve their issues to do that, because there is a pattern that goes on. But I believe that it will be helpful to whoever, even for one session.
Okay.
So I hope people will feel free to join us.
And is there additional information on your website or on Unity's website about
yes.
the book discussion group?
Yes, it's at unityseville.org.
Okay.
And they can also call the office 978-1062, area code 434.
Yeah, 978-1062.
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, Patricia, thank you so much for coming in today. Terrific discussion. I think, very important topic, mm-hmm. and I'm really pleased that we were able to address it. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for having me on. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
If you're just joining us, you've been listening to the Mind and Heart Show, and we will be back next week. Check our Facebook page on Monday for next week's topic, and we'll see you then. Take care. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. Be sure and tune in again next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock for another edition of the Mind and Heart Show, only on WPVC-LP, Charlottesville.